Good afternoon, everyone. Nice cool day here in Arkansas. We just sang that hymn, "The Heavens God's Glory Do Declare." And certainly we can see God's glory in the heavens, but also from His creation. It's Thanksgiving is coming this week, and so we'll be celebrating that, and we can be thankful that God created animals and plants in such a way that we can tell there was some superior force, some great intelligence that made them. I know when we were in Branson for the feast this year, we went to the Butterfly Museum. And it was really interesting to see all the different types of butterflies and types of things that they ate and so forth, and learn a little bit about them. And when we got back here, they had a show on animal migration at the IMAX Theater, and that included migration of the monarch butterfly. So that was very interesting. And so I thought I would talk about that today. The title of my sermonette is "Thank God for Monarchs," about butterflies. We can learn a lot about God. We can learn that there is a God just by looking at the creation. So I'd kind of like to go through the life cycle of monarch butterfly and some of the things that they do or don't do, and see how that squares with evolution. People who are evolutionists and trained in that and studied many years, and they know quite a bit about science and the habits of animals and how plants play an important part in their lives and that sort of thing, and a lot more than I do, for sure. But if you just study one little animal, one insect or one plant, and read a little bit about it for a while, especially ones unique like the monarch butterfly, you can see that there is a God, and the creation does prove that there is a creator who's very powerful. Well, when monarch butterflies lay eggs, they lay them only on milkweed leaves, but only on the underside of milkweed leaves. Two things. First of all, milkweeds are poisonous. And then secondly, why lay them on the underside of the leaves? Well, the poisonous part of the milkweed is something else I'll talk about a little bit later. But can you imagine butterflies, the first butterflies that tried to lay an egg on the underside of a leaf? And I guess maybe they were a little sticky when they came out, but they would try to lay it, and maybe the first few would fall off, and maybe after hundreds or thousands or maybe even millions of butterflies tried to do that over the years, finally one got it to stick. And it hung there for a little while, and then gradually it dropped down to the ground on a string and was quickly eaten by a predator. Well, they have a quick-drying glue that they manufacture. And I don't know if it's exactly like super glue, but super glue is certainly a quick-drying glue. If you've ever tried to glue anything, you use your finger and try to glue something small to another substance, you realize that it sticks to your finger better than it does what you're trying to glue. So I wonder if monarch butterflies ever had their abdomen stuck to a leaf, and couldn't get off and couldn't lay any more eggs. Anyway, that's one thing. And so when this egg is hatched, it eats only the poisonous milkweed plant. It's only the leaves. Now, apparently, animals that don't have a backbone are not too affected by the milkweed leaves, but then again, the not very many animals eat them. The monarch butterfly's larva is one of the few. And it keeps eating them, and it eats many times its own weight. And some of the books that are written by evolutionists say they eat this poisonous plant to protect them from predators. But if you stop and think about the logic of that, how would it know to begin with that the plant was poisonous and it was going to retain that poison in its system, and it wouldn't hurt them, but it would kill a predator? That's pretty advanced for a little insect that has a brain the size of a pinhead. Another amazing thing about it is it has this coloring on the outside, stripes. It has black and white and yellow stripes on the outside. The larva does, caterpillar. And apparently that is a warning to predators. See the yellow and the black together, I guess the white. That's a warning to predators that this insect may be poisonous. But I don't know how it got the message to the predators, you know, in the first place. Maybe it had a sign up saying, I'm going to paint myself with these stripes and they're going to be a sign to you that it's poisonous. But anyway, they do have that. And then another amazing thing, probably the most amazing thing about all butterflies, is that it goes through this stage called the pupa stage. And so after these larvae, the caterpillar larvae, eat all they want and they get to about 2 inches in length, then they just suddenly stop eating and they hang themselves upside down on a plant. Now, it doesn't have to be a milkweed plant. This is probably the first time that they get off of the milkweed plant. They find a kind of a secure place and hang themselves upside down. But they use a silk thread to do that. They use their spinneret, which I wonder how that evolved over the years, you know. But anyway, it's a handy tool to have when you're trying to hang yourself upside down from a plant, I guess. They hang themselves there for a while, and then an amazing thing happens. The outside of their body starts to, it falls off to begin with. That's one of about 3 or 4 times that their skin has fallen off. But then there starts to form a green shell. It's called a chrysalis. And this forms around the larva. And you would think that it would still be stripes, but it's not. It's green. And I guess it kind of blends in with the green leaves of the plant that they're on. Anyway, an amazing thing happens between that time and a few weeks later, because this is what's called an extreme makeover. Now, obviously, we know that the larva, the worm, grows wings and turns into a butterfly, right? So that's a really an amazing thing in itself right there. But there are several other things that happen which are equally amazing. The caterpillar first had a chewing apparatus where it chewed the leaves, the green leaves of the poisonous plant. And that was changed into a kind of a straw-like feeding tube that rolls up when it's not in use. And it's used to drink nectar out of flowers. So I guess, you know, if you put yourself in the place of this larva and all you'd eaten all your life was poisonous milkweed leaves, you probably want something different. So they change quite a bit. And so now they can drink nectar. They're on a liquid diet, going to be on a liquid diet. Their digestive system changes from a real large stomach, which covered about 80% of their body, into a very small one, which can only digest liquids. Their eyes, and you wouldn't think their eyes would have to change, but the caterpillar's eyes don't see very well. They can only tell the difference between darkness and light. And their simple eyes, they change into compound eyes, which can tell color and movement. And, of course, they can tell darkness and light, too. And they go from 4 sensory tentacles to 2 antennae, which are on their head. And they help the butterfly navigate in flight. And so if you've ever tried to catch a butterfly, you realize they can navigate pretty well in flight. The poison in the body of the caterpillar goes into the wings of the butterfly. There's no longer any poison in the butterfly's body, just in the wings. And one of the neat things that happens during this pupation period is that they get a new style. Before, they just had stripes, and they were horizontal stripes on the caterpillar. And so it actually made it look bigger than it was. You know, it didn't It didn't do anything for its figure at all. But when it was a butterfly, when it became a butterfly, it doesn't have stripes any longer. It's got mainly orange wings with some black outlines and then some white polka dots on the edge of the wings. So it's a little bit more stylish than what the larva had. And then one very important thing that happens is it can now reproduce. The caterpillar couldn't reproduce. And so I imagine in an evolutionary state, there was a period of time when that posed a major problem for the caterpillar. However, it's good to know as a butterfly they can reproduce. There's one more amazing thing about the monarch butterfly, and it's probably the most amazing insect in this regard, in that it migrates. It migrates. You know, there are a lot of insects will lay their eggs in a capsule or a case or something that keeps them dormant all winter long. And then when spring gets here, the eggs hatch out and they form larvae or whatever, and they're ready to go. But the monarch butterfly doesn't do that. For 3 or 4 generations, they go through the stage from egg to larva to pupa to adult butterfly. But the last generation of that year doesn't do that. It doesn't reproduce immediately. It decides to fly south for the winter. And I guess they don't like the idea of being around in the cold winter time and trying to sleep in a cocoon or something like that. Anyway, they fly south. And they fly up to 3,000 miles south, which is quite a bit farther than I would want to go. But they go into the interior of Mexico, into the Sierra Madre Mountains, and into a very small space, about 70 miles wide. As a matter of fact, it wasn't really discovered by scientists until the 1970s. So butterflies have been doing that for quite a while, but scientists didn't find out where they went until just recently. They roost on a special type of fir tree, and I don't know, it's kind of a balsam fir. I don't know how the butterflies determine which kind of tree it is. You know, I have a hard time distinguishing trees myself, and probably couldn't have a hard time telling a white pine from a yellow pine or something like that. But anyway, they can distinguish this special kind of fir tree, and scientists have found that in some cases, butterfly will land on the same tree that its ancestors had landed on. Now, keep in mind, this generation of butterflies had never been to Mexico before, never been to this mountainous region, never been on this fir tree before. But in some cases, they land on the same tree that their ancestors had landed on. Well, it's an amazing story, and I think we can take comfort in that when we look at insects, when we look at God's creation and stuff. So if you'll turn to Romans chapter 1. Yes, I do have a scripture. Romans chapter 1 and verse 20. Romans chapter 1 and verse 20. Paul had something to say about this creation. And there were people back in his day that didn't really believe in God or didn't think that God was all-powerful and so forth. Romans 1 and verse 20 says, "Since the creation of the world, His, God's, invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made." We can look at what God created and understand about God. "Even His eternal power." You can see a great deal of power in God's creation, whether you're looking at the heavens or looking at tiny insects that He's made. "And Godhead," or divinity, you can tell that it had to be a great intellect to create something like a butterfly, a monarch butterfly, to do the things that it does, you know, having such little capability on its own, a brain the size of a pinhead. "Because all they knew, although they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts. Foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. And so if you read the works of evolutionists, you'll see that they all profess to be wise. And they use a lot of innovative explanations trying to show that God was not involved. There was not a creator involved in the animal and plant life that we see. But we can be thankful that that's not the case, that there is a creator God, and he is very powerful, all-powerful, and has a great intellect, great wisdom. We can see that in his creation, and we can be grateful for that.